Welcome back to the Channel 84 Variety Show. Now, as you can see, I haven't got Rob with me. Instead, I have a fellow ginger-bearded friend here. Mark, say hello. This is obviously Ginger-Beard Mark, as you can see by the interview that I put out everywhere saying come and join us. But, Mark, tell us, who are you?
That's a philosophical question.
Definitely so.
We could be here a while answering that. Now, I'm just a guy from Wolverhampton who likes the fringier side of things and the more unusual. That makes it sound like I like gothic dungeons and stuff. Like I don't mean it like that. Like when it comes to art and when it comes to entertainment, I like the fringier side of things.
Yeah. And maybe the path less trodden.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, we'll say that.
But
I feel like I'm stumbling over myself now. Interview people. I'm not used to being on this.
You're not the one that's normally being interviewed.
We'll come on
to that in a minute. But other than your interview stuff, obviously, what do you produce? Because I came across you a fair few years ago now. I was trying to work out how many years ago we kind of first even just started chatting. And I think that was all through Graham of Jaws 19 fame.
Yeah.
And we started chatting on, as it was, Twitter. I still call it Twitter. I refuse to go to X. I kind of discovered you through your Sunday Wanders series, which then became us wandering around Letchworth and Welland. So what sort of things do you produce?
Yeah, it's like Sunday Wanders was sort of my first stab at doing my own thing. Like I'd helped produce some music videos before that and worked on some little things for other people. But like Sunday Wonders were the first things I did myself. And I suppose in YouTube parlance, they were adventure videos. So they were me going to an interesting place, maybe somewhere with a great history, maybe a filming location, which is the one Tom joined me on. We went to the filming locations of The World's End.
Yeah, good old Wellingarn City in Letchworth. And I like the fact there's comments still going on there to this day on that video.
Yeah. And I still try. Edgar Wright's retweeted it once, and I still try every year to get him to retweet it.
Yeah, but he was quite taken with your video because you did the whole Cornetto trilogy, didn't you?
Well, I never did Shaun of the Dead in the end. I never got round to doing Shaun of the Dead, but I'd done Hot Fuzz and The World's End. Yeah.
Oh, maybe we should do Shaun of the Dead at some point then. Maybe. I'm sure it could happen.
Sunday Wonders revival. I do think about that a lot. Like, very occasionally people ask me about Sunday Wonders, and I do think, maybe.
That's fair enough. That was my first kind of discovery of you, and just kind of watching your day trips or adventures and seeing these places. And some of them were just genuinely interesting. And as we were saying, they just weren't something that was common on YouTube. So you kind of had your own platform there of what you wanted to show.
Yeah, I'd say in a way there was lots of American YouTubers who had that sort of style, but there wasn't very many English people doing it at that point of like, let's go and look at some interesting stuff in England, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. There was more... I guess if you looked at a lot of the places to go, it was always the very common places, always the places that everyone had been to. It was standard tourism locations.
Yeah.
There was nothing particularly special about them. It's just everyone had done them, so it was probably easy to research, whereas yours were far more less known.
Oh, yeah. The few that are still online, I still get corrected about every now and again where it's like, oh, you missed out this detail or you got this bit wrong. And it's like, well... When I made that in 2015, there wasn't as much information about it as there is now.
You've got to love the internet crowd. You've got to love the fact that there will always be someone out there ready to just point their finger and go, you got that wrong, or you didn't say enough.
I worry that if I wasn't making stuff, I'd be that guy.
Oh, no. Don't be that guy. No, Mark, you can't be. Now, other than the Sunday Wonders side of you, though, you then kind of went into... You did 2 years with a podcast where you were doing interviews with people. Now, going from Sunday Wonders, which was not common places. You then went to interviewing some really big names. You had Dom Jolly, you had Gail Porter, Stuart Lee, you had Ian Lee, mm-hmm. Which were just big names. So you went from this idea of the Sunday Wonders to interviewing. Why did you change?
Well, it sort of happened naturally in a way where it was like in 2017, I think it was. It was whatever year Ian went into I'm a Celebrity.
Oh, yes, yes. It's been big in the news again, hasn't it?
So yeah, I did my interview with Ian. And that was just like, I didn't do interviews at that point. You know, I did these little adventure videos. But I had done what, in hindsight, is kind of a mini documentary about like a night at Ian's show on talk radio. So we'd got, you know, we were sort of friendly at that point. And so he was like, oh, anyone that wants to interview me, come and interview me. And I was like, well, I don't do interviews, but I'd love another opportunity to come and film with you for an hour. Like, that sounds like fun. So I went to the talk radio studios again, and just, it was like stupid questions. I was like, I know his favourite band are the Monkees, and I was like, who's your favourite Monkey? And he's like, oh, Mickey Dolenz. I'm like, why don't you marry him?
And it was a very... Yeah. As I was going through your videos earlier, so I think I've probably watched a good 90% of your videos. There's still some that I've either skipped past because I've just missed them, but the Ian Lee one is particularly odd in a good way. Yeah. In a good way.
It's silly. It's silly. And there is, like, unreleased on a hard drive somewhere. I did do, like, 10 serious questions with him that night, but I was just like, no, forget that. Like, just focus on these silly ones. And hey, and I had so much fun, like, editing the back and forth. Like, I'd never done that before, of chopping this guy and this guy and this guy.
Yep.
And yeah, so that sparked something in me. But then it was a full year, so it was like 2018. Robin Ince, who I sort of know, was in Wolverhampton, and I said, "Oh, can I do an interview? I did this interview with Ian. Like, can I do an interview with you?" And so that is the borderline then, where that has got a couple of silly questions in, I think, or sort of slightly sillier questions. And a few serious ones.
Well, I was going to say, Robin Ince, you can get away with it.
Yeah, yeah.
Really,
yeah.
With him. That's the sort of person he is.
And I feel like, again, he knew me well enough to know, oh, God, this is not just some dickhead. Like, he knows that I'm being silly. Like,
yeah, and you can imagine. I mean, I ballsed it up. So before we were doing the podcast, I had another go at doing YouTube, and like we were discussing before, and I had a go at doing retro gaming YouTube, and realizing how hard it is to get a good video on something that no one has done. There were other things I thought I'd give it a try, and I went up to Blackpool and did the arcade festival up there. I can't think of its name now, but it room full of all the old arcade machines set to free. Absolutely amazing time. And I bumped into the bloke from the Gadget Show, and I can't think of his name now off the top of my head. And obviously it's a famous person. He said yes, so I could interview him. And the fact that he had said, right, no, stop, that's a question that everyone asks. Let's think about something you can ask that isn't something that everyone asks. And I'm still to this day, I never released that one because I just sat there thinking, I was such an idiot. I said such awful things that must have been so embarrassing. I can't believe he didn't just say, yeah, turn it off. We'll call it a day.
Yeah. I think that's the preparation though, isn't it? That, you know, that makes the difference there. That I think, but as silly as it sounds and as obvious as it sounds, it's like, as long as you can learn from things like that, like, it's fine. You know what I mean?
That's fine.
To have an interview that you'd ever release, as long as you learnt something for it that you take to the next one.
Precisely. I mean, obviously I'm interviewing you now, but for me, it helped me kind of walk away and go, you know what? Maybe this isn't quite the thing I should be doing. And I'm glad I did, because coming across the podcasting idea, and okay, maybe we're already very saturated market, and Now we've got famous people coming in and just saying, there's some money and all, look, I'm number one. This has been much more enjoyable. And I kind of get the idea from the interviews and the interviews that I've watched that you've done, as much as you enjoyed Sunday Wonders, there was a lot of, as much as you say, you asked the occasional sensible question, but also the fun and the silly questions, that you had a lot of passion for these interviews when you got them. The Gail Porter one, for example, was exceptional.
Thank you, man. Yeah, I appreciate that. That was like my second, what I'd call second proper one. You know, I did, so it was like almost a year again after Robin Ince, I did the Epic Beardmen one, and my friend Rob shot that, and it looks beautiful, and we had lapel mics on, and it feels really nice and professional. And then, yeah, that was like the October, I think, of like 2019. Yeah. And then, yeah, January, I went to London, hired a room at the Soho Theatre and interviewed Gail Porter. And, yeah, then the following month, went to Telford and interviewed Dom Jolly. And at the end of the interview with Dom Jolly, I go, oh, good luck with your tour. And he goes, what could go wrong? And that was February 2020.
Yeah. That's a whole another subject that
but because of what happened then with 2020 is when I switched to doing them on Zoom, and so again I started with like sort of friendly territory. I think Ian Lee was probably the first one I did on Zoom, and then I started doing them more, and for a long while really I did them on Zoom even when we were allowed to mingle again. But yeah, again, I think I learned something from every single one of them. It's like as great as it was to get like Gail and Dom, I think that like now, however many years later it is, three, four years later, I think I'd do both of those so much better now. You know, just because I've learned so much from all the ones I've done in between, you know what I mean?
I mean, I know exactly what you mean. The more you do it, the more you learn. Then the more you go back and you look at what you've previously done and go, well, I could have done so much better, that I could have done this differently. I could have not done that, for example. So I know exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
Now, for fear that this will obviously get, well, not that we're monetized on YouTube, but one interview I am still the most intrigued in how it even came about has to be Cunt in the Gang.
Okay.
How did that one happen? Before we get on with actually the main purpose of this interview, how did that one come around? Because that must have been about Christmas time, surely.
Well, yeah, it was. There's no really big story behind that one. It was just like I think we'd both been on. It'd been announced the week before we were both on Stuart Lee's On the Pedestal list.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I think it was that way around. And I think I just used that, so I just emailed him and said, hey, we're both on Stuart Lee's pedestal list for this year. Like, do you fancy doing a chat with me?
That's amazing.
I'm sure it was that way around. So, yeah, it's as simple as... And this is a big thing, and this is advice for anyone who wants to do anything. Is ask. Like, you'd be amazed how far just asking will get you sometimes. And like, ask politely and ask respectfully and everything that goes with it. And
don't ask for too much. Yeah, that's the other thing.
If you're going to ask for something, the favour goes, I think.
Exactly. Start with something small. If they're then willing to help more afterwards, or they ask that question, say, is there anything else you need? Again, still be sensible with it, but yeah, or that politeness and just asking. I'm amazed at how many people have come forward and helped with audio for the Christmas episode, for example. So yeah, I know exactly what you mean on that one.
And so I think that like with lots, you know, there's some that are a bit more convoluted, and some obviously people that are harder to get to. Basically, like someone like Stuart Lee is very hard. He's not on social media or anything. It's very hard to get to. So it's like, there are, you know, more complicated ones. But for the most part, even those ones basically boil down to, basically boil down to ask.
Nice. Okay, well, look, I think our audience knows who you are now.
Has a better idea. Yeah, so I did interviews up and... Well, I still do interviews. I'm only on hiatus, guys. I'm only on hiatus.
Well, one of the reasons you're on hiatus is obviously this project you're working on. So give us a quick breakdown. What is this Kickstarter about? Now, it's been titled on this interview, it's to do with Melt It.
Yeah.
And we've been bandying it around on Twitter, on Threads, on Blue Sky, on Discord, that it's to do with Anthony Irvine. So what is this Kickstarter project about?
It's this turning this book into a documentary, basically. This is a fantastic book that came into my life early this year and has now sort of changed the course of my life for a while. So, yeah, I January or February, I found out that Go Faster Stripe were putting out that book, The Book of the Iceman. And I'd been fascinated by the Iceman for years. For a while, I genuinely didn't know if he was real or not. I thought he was like a little bit of like comedy folklore that sort of like Simon Munnery and Stuart Lee had made up.
See, I hadn't heard of him until you put your post up saying, look, we're doing a Kickstarter campaign. Can you help? Can you get some information out there? I started doing my digging for it as well. And it's someone I'd never even heard of. But now I've gone and had kind of done that digging and see what he did, I want to know more.
Yes.
That's the thing. It was just straight away, there's this unusual nature of what he did, I guess, starting in the 80s and then looking at more his more recent works as well. You then start to kind of dig into it a bit more. And I mean, you went and did a video with him at his gallery, didn't you?
Yeah. So Go Faster Stripe, I found that Go Faster Stripe were putting that book out. And then Rob Ringham, who wrote the book, got in touch with me. And he'd seen my interview with Stuart Lee and my interview with Richard Herring, I think it was, a couple of my other ones. And said, oh, would you like to interview the Iceman? And I was like, yes, I would. Because like I said, you know, to me, I knew he was real at this point. But obviously, I was like, yes, you know, and I'd got the book at that point, and I'd read through the book, and I was like, oh yes, I need this, and it was chaos.
Go, fellas, knowing how when you say chaos, I can genuinely believe it was utter chaos.
Well, he fired a gun halfway through it.
What? That's unexpected.
Give you a rough idea.
Was he demonstrating what he was doing?
Yes, part of the Iceman's act. So the Iceman, to explain for people, obviously, I sort of talk about him like people know who he is, but obviously that's what we're here to do, is tell people who he is.
And this is what the Kickstarter's about. Very quickly, yeah. Going back to that before you describe any more.
Sorry.
So you are working on a production that's going to take this book to the next level. So you're going to bring the life of Anthony Irvine, aka the Iceman, onto screens. We're going to hopefully see him, thanks to Stripe, through some art house cinemas. But ultimately, there's going to be this production that people will be able to watch that will go into the history, the life of, and what's going on now.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a documentary about Anthony Irvine, who was a performer in the 80s and 90s, then disappeared for about 20 years, did a comeback show for Stuart Lee as part of Stuart Lee's austerity gig in the South Bank Centre, I think, in 2011, and then sort of made odd appearances here and there, and then, you know, was quite hard to get hold of. And then I think it was in the, like, sort of around lockdown, I think he sort of reappeared as an artist. And yes, I know he's an artist, but he only paints pictures of the Iceman and the block of ice.
Yeah, so I was going to say, so yeah, first of all, the 2011 comeback, I think I've only just started to get to that area of the book now, because I think he was saying about how he annoyed a lot of people with looping a specific piece of music.
Yes.
For the art, and he hadn't even thought about it. He was looping it, and the idea was it was just to be some background music, but to then have an angry man come over and say, "Can you turn it off?" kind of gives you a bit of an idea of the man himself. But
I was playing that on the as we were setting up to do the day one of filming. I sat playing the loop on my phone.
Oh, fantastic!
Just to get us in the mood.
But it's interesting, as I think. Where I started with my looking into it for this was watching your video of you going around the gallery yes. with him. And the thing that struck me about it is how similar his artwork is, although about just the ice or the Iceman himself, how similar it is to I don't know if you've come across, but an artist called David Shrigley.
Yes.
It very, very similar style. And another person, if you've not heard of, go and look him up. I think the first one I discovered was a book of his called Ants Piss in Your Beer. And it's just, his work is just phenomenal. But Anthony Irvine's seemed very, very similar. There was not a darkness, but there seemed to be a whole host of different emotions into the pictures themselves. And not one of them could you pinpoint and say it's the same style as that painting over there yeah. or that one over there. They seem to all be very individual, which I was quite taken with. I've got to say, I was very taken with it.
And when you consider that they're all the same topic as such, the Iceman and the block, they're all so massively different. Mm. I mean, I've got one in my house and Rob Ringham's got one in his house. And they're just completely different. Like, I don't know if you'd necessarily look at, maybe, you know, someone that's really into art would know, but I don't even think you'd look at them and go, oh yeah, that's the same artist. Like,
yeah,
they're
exactly.
so different.
Yeah, I think that's possibly where the difference is with Shrigley's work compared to Anthony Irvine's is that, yeah, Shrigley, you can look at most pictures that he's done and you can say, that is David Shrigley.
Yes.
But you're right. In a lot of the ones that I've seen of the Iceman, there's such a varying amount. Some are very childlike almost, whereas then you've got some that are really quite deep and a lot going on in them, and neither of them look similar. So it's an interesting one. But what made you take this on board? I know you said that you had the idea that he may be kind of this mythological character. Did he actually exist?
Yeah.
But what made you take that step back when the book came out and say, this is genuinely something I want to do more on if I had the choice?
It was.
And obviously, which when you get asked, can you do it, you jumped for. But what made you want to?
Well, there's two things there. It was doing the interview with him, spending only a day or two chopping down 120 minutes worth of footage into 40 minutes worth of footage, but I had so much fun doing it. Honestly, I felt so creative putting that together. And then the Googleton Farm video, I went down to Dorset and spent a morning with him and filmed that and came back and just wanted to edit it straight away. You know, where you're just so excited with something that
yes.
you can't wait to get cracking with it. And that's like the Googleton Farm art video. The audio, again, and this is a conversation we had off camera earlier, but the audio on that's not great. But I could have sent that to Rob and got that so it sounded a bit better. But I was too excited to edit it.
It wasn't just that. It kind of gave you the idea, the whole raw feeling of the situation as well.
Yeah. Well, he's because he's wearing a lav mic, but he did manage to switch it off in his pocket. So it's the camera audio, and that's where you can hear me giggling all the way through.
And was that the video as well, where just all of a sudden you change it to monochrome and he's saying goodbye to someone? So, oh, have you had enough? Have you? See you later then.
And then cuts back in with the music. Again, I had so much fun making it.
But it really comes across as that. So
I'd done those two, loved making them, felt like I say, those are the two things. And I've done some really cool stuff this year. That's not like bagging on anything else I've done this year. I've done some really cool interviews this year, but it's just like, yeah, there's something about Anthony that sort of got me excited. And yeah, I fell madly in love with him. Like, as just, oh my God, I just want to know everything about you. And you're like, not only do I find you fascinating as a performer, like, you're a lovely man. Like,
yeah.
When I spend time with him, I'm just smiling like the whole time.
But so where do you think you first came across the Iceman? Because you say about you thinking, was it real or not? But you must have come across that idea of him to start with. So whereabout do you think you came across
it? It would have
that?
Been Stuart Lee, Richard Herring, Simon Munnery, Kevin Eldon, someone like that, from that sort of group.
Yeah.
Who would have brought him up in an interview. Oh, you know, when sort of... He's almost a go-to when it comes to describing unusual 1980s cabaret acts. There's like, oh, you know, everyone heard of Mr. Methane, for example.
Yes.
But then, like, then, you know, the ice, oh, and there was the bloke who melt the block of ice. Like, they might necessarily know his name or know anything about him, but they'd be like, oh, you know. I was watching a documentary recently and about Ian Cognito, the comedian. It's a really really good documentary. And Joe Brand's in that, and there's a clip of her going, there was a man who melted blocks of ice. And it's just like...
So he was obviously held in quite high stead then.
By what certain people, yes, I think.
And that kind of leads me then into one of the kind of final questions before we go on for too long.
Yeah.
Why should anyone care about him then? I know that sounds a really harsh way of saying it, but... Obviously, I'd never heard of him, but now I've heard of him, the stuff I've seen has made me want to dig more into it. And obviously, I'm reading Melt It now. But why should people actually go out there? Why should they fund the Kickstarter to start with? Because it's likely that they've never heard of him, or dependent on the generation, obviously, they may have vaguely heard of him or remember him from one of the variety shows in the early 90s, late 80s.
Yeah, well, I think that's it. I think, like, if you immediately go, why would I fund this? I don't think you're the right sort of person for this. But I think if you hear, what, there was a guy who melted blocks? What? What? Well, why? What? I think if you're that type of person, then that's exactly why, because that was my first reaction. That was Rob Brigham's first reaction, you know, of where hear it and you want to understand it, you want to know more about it. If you hear it and go, well, that's stupid, you're not for us.
Very, very briefly, actually, we've completely neglected it. And this will be one of those moments that I'll then go back and listen to this and go, oh, we didn't neglect it at all. I'm just talking out my arse. But we've said he melted blocks of ice, but I don't think we actually said... Basically, in the 80s, he was doing the pub circuits and then the early variety shows. And
when it was when stand-up was cabaret.
Right, okay.
There wasn't like a stand-up night. There'd be like a cabaret night. And like I say, you would get people coming and doing straight stand-up, but you would get people doing sketches and people doing... fringy stuff, like I say, like, and
obviously a start of a great number of comics that are still going today.
Yeah.
But the Iceman was something that he was a, would you call him a visual performer, I guess?
Yeah.
And he would bring this ice block on, which he numbered each of them. I understand he's destroyed a lot of the paperwork, so he doesn't really know what each block number was.
Yeah.
But his entire thing was talking while trying to melt this block of ice with whatever he had to hand or whatever he'd brought with him.
Yeah. Yeah, so he would bring props on stage, a gun, as I mentioned earlier, like pyrotechnics, rock salt, de-ice. He would have cans of de-icer on his head. And, yeah, his goal was to melt... I'll show you something, actually, that kind of represents what he was trying to do.
Go for it.
And this is also kind of a plug for the Kickstarter as well, is he would melt blocks of ice in order to make this duck, this is the same duck that he's had for however many years, float in water, like the water came from the ice.
Because a lot of the time, and again, I think it says it in the books, he said, the ice is going to melt anyway.
Yeah.
So whether I'm successful or unsuccessful on stage, it's still going to happen. But that was actually, that was one of my questions was going to be, tell us about the duck. Because I've seen the artwork of the duck, I've seen the picture of the duck, and now we know a little bit more about the duck.
Yeah, that's the duck's purpose. And then he would do puns. So, because the ice, he'd never usually have enough time to melt the ice sufficiently. The duck would be in dry duck.
A lot of puns were involved in his work.
Yeah. But he would assemble bamboo structures, mainly bamboo structures, with bits of gutter in, so that as the block would melt, the water was supposed to trickle down and get to the duck, but it never usually got to the duck.
Right, okay. And those of you that do go out and buy the book, which is an absolute well worth read, by the way, there is a lot of photos from his at. So there's a couple where you can see the ice block suspended above him on this contraption with the guttering below him, and him wearing what almost looked like, I think it was off the, I was only a quick glance earlier, but it almost looked like he's in one of those. Yeah, it looks like that's exactly. It looks like he's ready to go and collect lava from somewhere, but he's wearing a welder's mask. Yeah, that's it. Check out the YouTube video that go. This interview will go onto YouTube as well, so you can actually see what Mark's putting up on the screen.
Oh, yeah, sorry, I forgot that this is a I'm so used to doing video.
Join the club. I completely. Brilliant, brilliant podcast content, except for when you're showing things on screen. But that's my fault.
I bought multiple props, man. I can't, you know, I'm a prop guy.
Oh, absolutely.
But yeah, to cut a long story short, too late for that. Anthony was a performer in the 80s, much loved by comedians like Joe Brand, Mark Thomas, Bill Bailey, even Mike Myers of Austin Powers and Wayne's World fame saw him and really enjoyed him in the 80s.
And I think that fits with the fact that even to this day, they bring him up at any point they can to kind of make that point about things. Shows you how, as I say, in regards, the sort of regards they held him in. So he obviously had something that managed to get the imagination of others going.
I think that's what I'm trying to say is like that if a man melting blocks of ice, like going on stage with a block of ice to melt with the purpose of melting it to entertain people sounds remotely interesting to you, then come on over to our Kickstarter. We've got we've tried to spread out the tiers as much as possible. Rob's done Kickstarters before. I'm a Kickstarter virgin, so. But we've done a £3 tier, which is what I recommend to anyone who's got a vague interest. And for £3, you get signed up to add like a special mailing list that me and Rob are going to set up, where we're going to send you photos and videos and little updates, you know, a couple of times a month. And so it's like, you know, if you're vaguely interested and you just want to throw £3 at us, like we were busking in the street or something, then you get these updates.
£3 is absolutely nothing, but towards the project, enough people just putting in £3 alone is going to help you sail past. Now, I checked a couple of hours ago. You were at £700-odd your £1,000 total. You've got 21 backers. You deserve a lot more, but you've got 25 days to go. And I'm absolutely certain you're going to hit your £1,000, if not more.
I hope so.
No, I don't see a reason why you wouldn't. Yeah. Because there's a giant gap in the market at the moment. Not just on podcasts, not just on YouTube, but everywhere. I think everyone's pretty much sick of streaming services. They're sick of all the standard things that are coming out. And I mean, I was a huge YouTuber. I used to love. I barely watch anything on Netflix or Disney Plus anymore. Most of the stuff I used to watch was YouTube because of the amount of content that was there. But even now, it's becoming thin on the ground because people are just starting to repeat what everyone else has done. So to have something new like this, and for it to only cost you kind of £3 to kind of get involved in it, I think that's brilliant value for money.
Yeah. It's something, it's a passion project is the thing. It really is. Because I had to explain this to a guy who, I don't know if he was being a jerk or not, but he seemed like a bit of a jerk in a Stuart Lee right. group the other day when he said, £1,000 isn't very much money to make a documentary. And it's like, yeah, I know, dude. Trust me, I'm very aware of that. But it's like, as I pointed out to him, A, no one's going to give us, it's not like the BBC or Netflix are going to give us hundreds of thousands of pounds to make a documentary about an obscure 80s cabaret act. That's just not going to happen. It's got to be made by people like me and Rob who are willing to work for free, who are doing it because we love doing it. Like the vast majority of this money is already planned to cover travel expenses, to pay for our cameraman Graham to fly over from Dublin. Rob lives up in Glasgow, so for him to get trains down to Bournemouth to be with Anthony, it's going on things like that. And it's all it's doing is, you know, we could have self-funded this, but it would have taken us a few years. Whereas just to get this little, you know, the literal Kickstarter at the beginning of the project, we think we can plan in a few filming trips and, you know, and get a big bulk of the film done just with the help of like people helping us with the travel expenses, essentially, because we're all working for free and just because we love it, you know, and we want to make something that, you know, that Anthony's going to be proud of.
And that's the key thing, isn't it? So there is a passion project and then there's passion projects. And the fact that you've already said it's not about the money, it's not about what we're doing, we want this to happen.
Yeah.
Is well, why I think you should succeed, because you get people with their passion projects and they'll go onto Kickstarter and they'll straight away go, there are 10 grand. That's what I want. That's what I need to make it happen. They won't think about how can we make it happen at far less. And it sounds like you all have just agreed that this needs to happen. And if this is the minimum we need, then that's what we're going to do. Yeah. There's no over budgeting for it. It's just, let's do this. Whatever happens.
Yeah, basically, I mean, the trailer, that there's like a little trailer on the Kickstarter, which is worth, and I'm sure Tom will link the version.
Absolutely, all links, of the material can be found in the description of the podcast and on the YouTube video.
But the little trailer that I cut together, you know, the interview footage that you see in there, you know, Graham flew over from Dublin, Anthony came up to the Midlands from Bournemouth, Rob came down from Glasgow, I rented a hall for us to film in. And, you know, that all came out of our pockets. You know, that was day one that we all paid for ourselves. And that was how we were sort of going to proceed. But Rob's done a few Kickstarters in the past for some of his books that have done well. And we thought, oh, why don't we give it a try? But, you know, like I say, we don't want tons of money. We just sort of need enough to help
to
us.
To do it.
Yeah, cover trains and planes and automobiles.
So I've got one last question.
As many questions as you want, Tom.
No, I'm going to do two more questions on this, and then I'm just going to get you to kind of give out all the details that you've got to hand so people know what to do other than going to the description. I guess the first of the two questions has to be, what has the Iceman thought about all of this? Because obviously he's gone from being in the public eye in the 80s to disappearing to back in the public eye again. Is he excited by the idea that he's going to be back in the public eye again? Is he fairly nonplussed about it? How does he feel towards being kind of bought into this documentary?
He loves it.
The fact that he's fired a gun in front of you kind of makes me think, yeah, he likes the idea of being
He's an actor, he's a performer, you know, he loves the attention. So it's for him, it's just a big, you know, it's one big performance, really. He gets to be centre of attention. And, you know, I know on our first day, he really enjoyed everyone's, you know, there's about seven of us there as the crew, and he loved being the centre of everyone's attention for that day and making us all laugh. Like, you could see he really lit up when we'd all burst out laughing at something he'd say. So, yeah, he loves it. He sent me a lovely email today, which, you know, I won't read, but I'll sort of paraphrase of saying he's really excited that this year, with the book and now sort of announcing the film towards the end of the year, like, it's great that, you know, this sort of, he went away and now he's sort of come back out of nowhere.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Really excited about it.
Oh, that's just another reason to get this funded then, really, because if he's excited about it, and everyone that's making it is excited about it, it deserves to be out there.
Yeah.
But coming before we go any further then, stopping it from getting too long, how do you think the variety scene would see him now? Because obviously, I find it a bit of a bone of contention when you see things like Britain's Got Talent or America's Got Talent. And to be fair, I would say the American side of things, maybe not so much, but the Britain's Got Talent side, I just don't see it as variety anymore. It's very much an option to have someone that's either dancing or singing. There doesn't seem to be anyone that's willing to go on there and be different. And do you think kind of he'd be popular today? If he went on to something like Britain's Got Talent, what do you think would happen?
I don't know. I don't. It's hard to say, isn't it? Because those shows can sometimes be made, like, edited in a way where they change it from laughing with somebody to laughing at somebody, and I worry that sort of format could easily do that to someone like Anthony. Be like, oh, look at this confused old man trying to melt ice, isn't he? You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. It kind of opens up kind of how I feel about the whole of that, which is, it isn't a variety show anymore, really, is it? It's we don't have traditional variety in the UK anymore, I guess.
Not really.
It's something that's disappeared, which I genuinely think it should come back, because I could talk about this for hours, but Saturday night TV, when you'd sit down with your family and there would be some form of even something like Stars in Your Eyes, for example.
Yeah.
Where you'd got someone who you'd think, oh, you could never be that person. And even they come out and they don't look slightly like that person, but they sounded amazing. You enjoyed it. I don't think there's that anymore. And I think Anthony Irvine, the Iceman, would fit in much better if we could bring more of that back to the public.
Yeah, but the thing is, he's not trying to be the Iceman anymore. You know what I mean? He is the Iceman, and it's not like he's ashamed of it or anything like that, or you know what I mean? He's very proud of what he did as the Iceman.
But he's progressed with his work.
Yeah, he's focusing on his painting now, and so there's talk of him maybe doing one or two performances and, you know, sort of more one-offs, maybe just more for us, more than anything, to film for the documentary. But, you know, he has talked about, well, you know, maybe I'll do one or two more. So, but, yeah, I think...
It's more a watch this space sort of...
Yeah, I think he wouldn't want to fit in today. I think he's, you know, he wants to fit in the art world.
That's understandable.
He'd rather be, like, you know, with next to someone like Stuart Semple or, you know, another sort of Bournemouth artist rather than a, you know, a telly personality these days, I think. I don't want to talk for him, but
no,
that's
of course,
the impression I get anyway.
And that's absolutely fair enough. Now, I've kept you talking for long enough. So, first of all, where can people find you, first of all?
I'm just at GingerBeardMark, like Instagram, Twitter, at GingerBeardMark, or slash, is it slash, or is it at GingerBeardMark on YouTube there?
You know what? I've got no idea what YouTube's doing anymore. I don't know if you need YouTube/C/ the channel name, or if it's just, I think it is the at symbol now. But if you type in GingerBeardMark, we will find you.
If you go type in GingerBeardMark in Google and then wade through all the photos of Mark Gatiss with a ginger beard, which is like, I don't know if it's a fetish or there's a thing for Mark Gatiss with a ginger beard. So if you wade through all those pictures, then you'll find my stuff. But yeah, gingerbeardmark.com is a link tree as well. I keep saying I'm going to get a website. I'm never going to get a website. But it's a link tree that's got the Kickstarter, the Melt It Instagram, and then all my gubbins underneath.
Awesome. So we'll get that posted up in the description. Where can people buy Melt It, the book? Is that in bookshops at the moment? Is that online only?
They're trying to get it into independent bookshops at the moment. But if you go to gofasterstripe.com, you can pick up a copy from there.
Fantastic.
And you can pick up a signed copy. The Iceman will... I don't think this is my copy. but yeah, you can get it signed by the Iceman as part of the Kickstarter. So yeah, if you just want a normal book and now, you can go to Go Faster Stripe and get it. But if you want a signed one by the Iceman, go over to our Kickstarter and you can pick up a signed copy and help us out, which is the most important.
That's the most important thing then. So head over to the Kickstarter. If any of this has interested you in the slightest, all the links are in the description. They'll also be on Mark's link tree. Yeah. Everything will be linked anyway. Go and find, have a look, dial it up on YouTube.
Yeah, so there's like a PDF copy of the book, there's a physical copy of the book, there's a signed postcard of Anthony's work, there's the print that you've seen, and this other one. That's Anthony's face. So both of them are available. A T-shirt, and then some credits, slightly higher. If you want to spend a bit more money, you can get yourself a tidy credit.
But either way, it's obviously worth doing. If you're looking for something new, something that hasn't been done to death, this is absolutely worth looking into, I think. So I think let's leave it at that. Mark, it's been an absolute pleasure. I was genuinely really glad you messaged me to say, can we do this? Because I've really had fun with this. Yeah. So thank you so much.
It's been really great to catch up as well, Tom. Absolutely. Really impressed with what you guys are doing over at Channel 84.
Thank you very much. And this will be out on YouTube within a few hours, and it'll be in the podcast feed as well in a few hours. So hopefully you'll get some people come your way.
Thanks ever so much in advance, guys. Even just for taking the slightest bit of interest, it genuinely means a lot to me, Robert and Anthony. Yeah.
And for just all of the audience that are listening, if you see any of the posts on Twitter, on Threads, on Blue Sky, or whatever you follow us on, please just clicking that retweet will be enough to just get the Kickstarter moving. You don't know if someone you know would actually be interested, so... Yeah. Retweet it, get it out there. If you can do the £3, absolutely brilliant. If you can do more, even better. But even just spreading the word would be really greatly appreciated at this point.
Definitely.
Lovely stuff. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks
so much. We'll stop recording now, and we'll catch you all next time. Cheerio.